Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. We start today's show in the Carabao Cup at the semi-final stages. First leg at Stamford Bridge saw Chelsea dominate proceedings, beating Spurs by 2-0. Kai Havertz opening the scoring in the 5th minute and an own goal from Davies, giving Chelsea the advantage going into that second leg. For more on this, look at this, right, cast of characters who are joining us. Frank Leboeuf, Julian Laurent, Nader Manua and Jan, who was actually at that game, bothering the managers afterwards. Jan, let's start with you, shall we? Chelsea superior in every way today.
Absolutely. And as you said, I spoke to the managers and I spoke also to Lloris, and I asked Lloris, why didn't you turn off the first half? He tried to get himself out of that, but he had to admit Chelsea were brilliant, especially in the first half. Or Tottenham was very bad. They're giving two goals away, of course. But it was all about Lukaku before the game. We, as people in the stadium, whatever, listening, will the crowd, how will they react on him? But as you said, Dan, they were desperate for him to get a goal. But I asked Tuchel about that after the game and how he reacted on that, and I said, he's been in Dortmund, he's been in PSG, he had Aubameyang, he had Neymar, and said Lukaku case was not the worst I've been involved in. And I think, yes, you said the script was that he was going to score a goal, but I think we have to give a big compliment to Lukaku and Chelsea Football Club, how they handled that situation with Lukaku. I think they did that very well, and it was a good win for them, 2-0, but I think that Conte is happy for another game. There's not many foreign managers in England who are happy for that, but at least he got a chance to get to Wembley in the second leg.
We won't go over the Lukaku ground again. Nigel's still suffering after everyone was shouting at him yesterday. But overall, Nadim, this has been a good week for Chelsea, and this was a great performance off the back of that comeback against Liverpool.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. But the slump is still there, and obviously, well, I say the slump's still there. They're falling behind in terms of Manchester City and the league title. But the fact is they've got a chance to go to Wembley, a chance to win the first silverware of the year that's available. And it was a positive performance with a few changes within it. I think overall, the Lukaku situation's been dealt with now. He's back in the side. He was working hard. I don't think he had his best game ever. But the fact is they're 2-0 up going into the second leg, and they're giving players minutes. So I think they've come out on this side of things, and it feels like they're united again, which could have been the exact opposite should they've lost these last two games. So I guess going into this next period, they feel good, they feel confident, and maybe they can mount a significant challenge between now and the end of the season.
Your boys were good today, Frank.
They were good. They were dominant. They did what they had to do, especially the first half. I think they should have killed the semi-final, scoring another goal. I guess because of the second leg, the return is not done yet. The job hasn't been finished. With the chances that they had, I think they should have won like 3 or 4-0, and it would have been an easy second leg. But they have to expect a hard job to have against Spurs in the second leg. But overall, they were better than Tottenham. Well, simply because first Tottenham weren't good, but because I think Chelsea were very tuned in, and they did what they had to do to win that game.
People have been talking about the formation for Chelsea, Frank. Obviously, he went back 4 today, which is against what he's been doing of late. Do you like that? Does this suit this side? Or is this just a one-off because it's the Carabao Cup and because it's against Spurs?
Well, I think it's just one shot where, you know, because of maybe Sarr, because especially Thiago Silva injured, Christensen as well. So it's maybe Tuchel decided to do that because also of the opposition. And the fact that in the middle of the park they didn't have a Kante, he wanted to rest a little bit Kovacic as well. So it's more a tactical aspect because of the opponent and because of the situation and all the players that he had in hand. But it was good. We didn't see Son, we barely see Kane. The only one who was quite of a threat was Lucas Moura. So overall, it was a satisfying 4 at the back. And maybe another solution in the future.
Who's making all that noise? That Jan, are you drinking a cup of tea during this show?
Sorry about that, but it was when you're in England, live as English. I was a tea.
You drank really loud. Yeah, I'm swallowing.
I would never disrespect a world champion when he speaks. So I very much apologise.
Oh, that's all right. Wait till we talk to Dana. Jules, what was wrong with Spurs today?
I think the biggest one is the gap in talent and the gap in the way the two teams are. One with Conte still learning how he wants them to play. You can see that even if they hadn't lost in the league with him since he arrived, they're still the game against Watford was quite average and quite poor for most of it, to be fair, because I think they're still learning. And also, I think he knows, and I think Jan hinted about it, that a lot of them are not good enough in that team, certainly not good enough for what he wants them to do. And that's why they're looking at a lot of positions to upgrade and get better players in. And I think today you saw the difference between even a Chelsea B team, yet still too good, too strong for a Spurs A team, really, because that was Spurs' strongest 11, pretty much. And on the other side, you had a lot of rotation and a lot of changes made by Chelsea, and yet they were still too good. So this is the difference in talent and the gap between the two clubs. I don't think there's any surprise there, really.
What sort of vibe did you get from Conte afterwards, Jan?
Well, I got the Conte vibes. I mean, I somehow love to interview him because it's somehow, in his funny way, he's always quite clear. So he's telling. So I asked him this. Julius is talking about it, this in lack of talent. Can you do that on a training ground, or can you do that to buy players? And then you just saw his Italian kind of expression, and he went into a long answer that you will find on my Twitter timeline anyway. But it was a long answer where he said that we have to train, but it's not an easy solution to just getting players and so on. But you can see he's frustrated. You can see he's a bit disappointed, and you can also see Jules know that because he was sitting on my same place that I had at Stamford Bridge. You are very close to the coaches, and you can see how they work. And you can see he looked a bit like he couldn't believe it, how bad they were, really. And Tuchel running around, and I'm so glad that not every journalist knew all the Germans, because all the things he can say during a game is unbelievable. But I won't do that on a family channel like ours.
Well, that's the first time you've decided not to swear on the show. Thank you very much for that, Jan. And Nadim, defensively, Spurs just look a shambles, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so. I think those, for as much as we say Chelsea outplayed them, I think the two goals that Chelsea scored, they were basically gifted. You look at the first one, and Spurs had the ball, but they just made the wrong decision in the wrong moment, and before you know it, they get punished for it. And I'll be honest, the second goal, there's going to be a lot of stress level that, say, the people who had the ball and so on. But I've looked back at that clip, and as the ball comes into the box, there's not, like, the nearest player is Mason Mount, who's outside the frame of the goal. There are four or five Spurs players in the middle of the goal. For me, Lloris should come and either claim the ball or say time, because he's got the best view of it all. I think if you look back at it, it's a horrendous goal. So it just goes back to say what Jan was saying about the coaching and things like this. It seems to me that Conte has a clear vision in terms of what he wants to see from his side. But clearly he looks at the players and he doesn't believe they're going to be able to have that sort. They're not going to be able to manifest that vision for him. And it's just little moments like that. You want a bit more composure. You want somebody to come and just claim it. Just take control of a situation which really wasn't dangerous. But unfortunately, at the minute, they're not delivering. And defensively, those types of mistakes against a side like Chelsea, they could cost you. And who knows, come the end of the game next week, they could be the reason why they're not on their way to Wembley.
It's interesting, we've talked about Spurs and the prospect of them finishing in the top four. That's kind of where the discussion is with regards to the Premier League at the moment, with Manchester City so far ahead. General consensus is Liverpool, of course, and Chelsea will finish second and third. So it's all about that fourth spot. From what we've seen, Jules, all of these teams, of course, have got problems. Is it going to be a case of the team that's got the least problems?
Yeah, maybe. Although they're very different problems, really, when you think about United and Ralf Rangnick and how he will have to implement all his ideas and making that work and click. With Mikel Arteta, he's clearly trying to get as many people fit as he can and try to get those young players keeping this level and this consistency, because as we know, especially for young players, sometimes it's just a bit up and down. I think for West Ham, he's trying to do what they did last season, beating the team that are outside of that top four, and then it doesn't matter if you lose against Liverpool, City and Chelsea. I mean, to be fair, this is pretty much the same for all the other three as well. And then you've got Spurs with Conte, who I think a lot will depend on who they can get, if they get someone, some new players in January, because they still need more creativity, they still need to be better defensively, especially in games like this. You saw today, and Nathan alluded to it, they're just not good enough defensively for most of the game. So I think different problems, but you're right, in the end it's the same narrative. Whoever will finish fourth is probably the one who make the less mistakes, especially once again in the game who are not against City, Liverpool and Chelsea, because you expect to lose those anyway. So yeah, it'd be very fascinating, I think, that race for top four, for the fourth place in top four.
General consensus, even just a couple of weeks ago, that Manchester United were favourites to finish in the top four because of the quality of their squad. But of course, since then, we saw that poor performance against Newcastle, defeat against Wolves as well. It's the first time we've had you on, Jan, since then. You told us Ralf Rangnick would be good. He's rubbish.
Well, first of all, Dan, I can hear you. I can hear your English. I can hear your English in your analysis. That is point one. Secondly, I mean, it's true. I mean, Newcastle away and the Wolves at home. I think the Wolves game was even worse, because I think that Wolves showed through their manager how a great system can work. And Manchester United was so far away from that. So I said that they're talking about gegenpressing, but it looked like depressing for Manchester United. And I think that Ralf Rangnick at least got to get him a week in training, on a training ground. I mean, in 2022, you never have time anyway. But let's see how he's doing. But I must say, there is some embarrassing thing around Manchester United at the moment. I mean, if there are signals out now, there are some people in the dressing room are not happy with Rangnick. He came 5 minutes ago. I mean, have a look at yourself. I mean, that is embarrassing. There's top players. They're playing top players for their country, and they're blaming other teams, or the manager.
Jan, I'm sorry, but I think before the game against Newcastle, Rangnick had 2 weeks to work with the players, and he did, and nothing happened. Well, yeah, the worst. They even play
Frank, fair enough. And but if you have a look at the coaches who have arrived in England, I think only Tuchel, you can see a sudden impact on their team. I'm not saying that Ralf Rangnick would be a success as Manchester United, but I think that it's very early to kind of judge what kind of team he will get there.
Again, Jan, I'm sorry, you're naming Tuchel, but I can name Conte. Conte arrived 8 games without losing a game, you know. So some coach can have impact. I think the problem with Rangnick, I'm sorry, I'm going to finish. The problem with Rangnick is, I think, he's not legitimate towards some players to be listened to. That's the main concern that he has. He has to get the dressing room, and so far he hasn't. He hasn't gotten it, because he's a non. He has maybe talent, but I think he's not listened by some players.
It's a very good point, Frank, in terms of people talking about coaches losing the dressing room. You make a very good point. It's also about winning the dressing room. And I think Ralf Rangnick got to win the dressing room with his ideas. That's what I'm saying. Let's see what he's doing in training. But last time I checked, without being the lawyer of Ralf Rangnick, this was the first loss he had for Manchester United. So we can use the stats as we want.
Jules, the concerning thing from a United perspective is that we've saw, once again, over the last 24 hours in the UK newspapers, these reports that the players aren't happy. It's really early, isn't it, in a manager's tenure to have these sort of stories leaking out?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's the most worrying, because, of course, we can always discuss the tactics and the 4-2-2-2 and the pressing or not pressing. All of this, of course. And some of these ideas and methods take time overall anyway. But I think the most worrying is those noise that come from the training ground. We know that, especially at United, there's a lot of things that are often leaked to some of the tabloids, to some of the press in general here in England. And that's not the kind of noise that you want, that there's players unrest, some of them are not happy. And I think Jan is right. I mean, after the guy just being here for a few weeks when a lot of this squad has had COVID. So it's not even if you'd been living all together for a month. You know, some would not have seen him for 2 weeks. So I find it a bit strange that already you've had enough of him, if we believe those reports. And certainly I think there's a lot of truth in it, because he deserves a chance like anybody else, of course, regardless of who you are and who you played for before. And I don't feel that maybe he's been given this chance by the dressing room, so there's still plenty of time for him to get things right and for him to get the respect from the dressing room. But it's wrong already that we even have to talk about Ralf Rangnick and who he is trying to get the respect from the Manchester United dressing room.
Nadim, you must have seen this in your Manchester City days, of course, a dressing room full of big stars. It must be very difficult for a manager, once they turn on him, to get him back.
Yeah, I think so. But I think there's a subtle difference. If we're going to talk about, say, that time at Man City with Mancini, like, he laid things out. He was in charge. This is how it's going to be. This is how you're going to play. If you don't do it, you won't play and you won't see anything at all. I think with this situation that we're having here, it feels really strange, because for the players, like, why is information being leaked out? Because it's of no benefit to you. Because at this point in time, nobody has any sympathy for Manchester United players at all. There's almost like a sense that for some of them, they're entitled, they're underperforming, you know, they don't deserve any credit and so on. So why release something at all, which is going to make you seem like that furthers that narrative? It's really, really strange. And I think Jan made a great point. I think at times, you know, you can lose the dressing room, but winning it is also key. But for those guys, this is your boss. This could be someone that's involved in the club for many years. Just buy into what he's saying. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But it's not going to be down to you to decide if you want to do it or you don't. He's in charge of you at the football club. If he says train at 7 p.m. at night for the next 7 nights, like, that's what you've got to do. And I think that's the difference, really. Some teams and some groups of players, they'll just go out and they'll do what the manager says, and they'll buy into it, and then there'll be success. They'll come from it. But if you go in with any strategy half-hearted, ultimately you'll see failed results. And even though they don't like it, the fact is the manager was brought in for a reason. It's because they were underperforming under the last guy. So they have to at least give it a try and then see what happens. But when it's 50-50, you will get nothing whatsoever.
Just a reminder, Extra Time, as always, is available over on our YouTube channel. The boys stay late to answer some of your tweets. Be sure to go over and check it out. The FA Cup, of course, is here this weekend. Taking a look at some of those notable third-round matches. It all starts on Friday. Swindon Town against Manchester City. Then Chelsea take on Chesterfield on Saturday. On Sunday, likes of Liverpool take on Shrewsbury Town. And Monday sees that all-Premier League affair, Manchester United against Aston Villa. Remember, all those games available on ESPN+.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Well, Barcelona, of course, being very much in the news after Laporte yesterday said that they are back when talked about the prospect of signing Erling Haaland. Of course, Erling Haaland, of course, this has been picked up in the newspapers. Haaland, if there is money. Oh, what an exciting headline that is. You take a look. Jan is, of course, our Haaland insider. As always, active on Twitter. This is not true. There's no deal, any understanding between Erling Haaland, Team Haaland and Barcelona. And so insistent was Jan to get his point across that he then tweeted out in Spanish as well. Erling Haaland, es interesante que los expertos sepan a dónde versus Haaland, pero el equipo Haaland no sabe a dónde va. Oh, what brilliant Spanish from myself as we welcome Sid Lowe to the conversation. Sid, 5 years with you, I'm fluent. Look at that.
I might need you to put subtitles on the screen so I can work out what you're actually saying.
Right, well, that's not very nice. I was trying, OK? It's been a while. Jan, why in Spanish?
Well, first of all, after we have a competition now in Spain, who will get Haaland? No, I would say it another way. Who has spoken to someone who says they get Haaland? Because that in Spain, everybody knows now he goes to Spain. The last one thing was that Erling Haaland spoke with a young boy at a beach and he said he's going to go to Spain. And that was all over the world. So I thought it was time to do that. And then I got like 300 journalists from Spain getting on Twitter. So I thought I would do this in Spanish. But if I may say, I think it's so entertaining to follow Spanish media, Spanish football, because it's clearly it's a fight between Barcelona and Real Madrid to be most credibility to get Haaland. And we know this is just it's not true. I mean, not even Erling Haaland knows where he plays next year. So how can the Spanish media know? And so this is just rubbish. And I don't know what else is in Spain. Sid can probably tell me, but this is not true. And just believe me, this is just a way to show that you have credibility, that you have the money if you had a chance. And you know what metaphor I can use that, Dan, but I won't do that tonight. But if you have all that money, you can do whatever you want. And that's what Laporta tries to tell the whole world. And all the best. And the Spanish media followed up, and I think that is cool.
Sid, it really is quite incredible, the front page that we saw there. Haaland, if there is money. All we've heard from Barcelona over the last year is that they don't have any money.
Yeah, if there is money, I'm going to buy a really, really big palace and I'm going to live in it. And I'm going to have a couple of Ferraris and all of these things, yeah. I think Jan is actually lying to us here. We all know it's absolutely true that he's going to Spain. He will sign for Real Oviedo in the summer. He will play for Real Oviedo next season. He is following in the footsteps of his idol, Michu. And I think it's an entirely correct decision. And I don't see why we're messing around with second-tier clubs like Real Madrid and Barcelona. I really don't see the point.
This is going to go on and on, isn't it, Jan?
It will go on and on, but maybe ends up in Spain, and maybe it ends up anyway. Can go to Barcelona, can go to Real Madrid. The only thing I think is quite interesting now. You can have a look if we analyze the situation now. They don't know where he's going. So, and there are two persons at the moment who is not saying anything, and that is the dad and his son, Erling Haaland, and everybody else is speaking, and it's of course it's entertaining. And you think that, Dan, you would ask me many questions about Sancho, just wondering how many questions and how often we're going to discuss Erling Haaland's future. And then Dortmund tries to say we have to give them a deadline, tell us when, and that's going to be February. Oh no, it's going to be January. Well, Dortmund, the only ones who decide that is Erling Haaland and Team Haaland. Because, as people maybe know, that if you have a clause in your contract, there is a period of time where you can get some club in to take that clause, to buy for that clause. So this could drag on, I'm not saying forever, but if forever is summer, it can drag on to the summer.
Sid, this off the back, of course, of Haaland being linked to Real Madrid as well, as part of a deal that could see Haaland and Mbappe join Madrid in the summer. Is that feasible?
Well, it depends. Is it feasible from Real Madrid's point of view? Yes. And there's no doubt, of course, they would absolutely love Haaland to join them and be alongside Mbappe. I think they feel that that would be, if you like, a statement as much as anything else. You know, even before we talk about whether it works in footballing terms, it would be an enormous statement. But of course, as Jan is saying, it will depend on what Haaland himself thinks and what he ultimately decides. But both Real Madrid and Barcelona would absolutely love Haaland to go there. And just as importantly, and I think Jan makes this point, I think this really is significant. It's also about being seen to be in the game, even if it eventually doesn't happen, about being seen to be a big player. And of course, this tallies really, really nicely with what Laporta was saying the other day, that idea of we're back, we're movers on the market now, we are the kind of club that, even if it doesn't happen, can be in for Haaland. But absolutely, right now, from a Spanish perspective, I don't think there's too much doubt that it feels like Real Madrid are in a stronger position to make the kind of bid that could eventually convince him. What I don't know, of course, and Jan probably has a much better view on this, is whether Haaland would want to play at Real Madrid alongside Mbappe.
Well, I've said that before, and I think that, and I'll say that Mbappe is the key here, because if he moves, I mean, that will kind of be a reaction of things. But I, to be honest, I don't think they know. I think they just see what's happening, and there's also a couple of clubs in England who will have the resources. There is also a club like Manchester City will probably need a number nine, and if you saw Harry Kane today, they won't go for him, would they? And there's a lot of clubs who will be in for him. But what we've learned from the family of Erling Haaland is that they've always been doing good analysis for where is the next move, and they will do the same this time. If he ends up in Spain, okay, but if he ends up in England, that can also happen. But the thing is, the 5th of January, nobody knows.
Meanwhile, Jules, we know Barca are desperate to get players off their books. At the moment, of course, they can't register Ferran Torres. Coutinho linked to a number of clubs in England, including Aston Villa.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Coutinho drill, if you want, how we call it in England, every 6 months in the January transfer window and then in the summer transfer window, which is much longer, so there's more time to link him with as many clubs as you can, even some who are completely unrealistic. And it's happening again, so it's Aston Villa, but also a lot of other top European clubs are ready to welcome him. Of course, I'm sure they all are. I'm not really sure, one, where he would fit Aston Villa, two, how they could pay his wages. And let's not even talk about a potential transfer fee. But that's, again, a long, long shot. I'm sure his agent, Kia Jorabchan, is trying his best to try to find somewhere better for him, because clearly I don't think he's got much of a future with Xavi at Barcelona. But again, we go back to the same thing. He's someone who's been injury prone so much, who earns so much money for what he's done to his teams in the last few years, which is not enough compared to how much he's been paid. So there's still, a long way to go for him to find a club anywhere, not just in England.
I was reading an article, Sid, that was suggesting, because Steven Gerrard played with Coutinho, if he went to Aston Villa, he could recapture his form, get him back to his best. Anyone who's seen Philip Coutinho play over the last 2 or 3 years knows that's pretty much asking for a miracle.
Well, look, that's it. I mean, the question at this point becomes, how do we define his best? What is Coutinho's best at the moment? How good do you realistically expect him to be? And of course, then what kind of value do you put on that? And of course, this was also unfolding in a market in which every club in Europe knows that Barcelona are in a difficult... They know that they're in a position where they need to make an impact on the salary limit right now. Quite aside from all of the kind of long-term financial problems. In other words, all those clubs will be looking at this and thinking, this is an opportunity. Are we interested in Coutinho? Yes. But one of the reasons why we're interested in him, because we may well get a really good deal here. We may well even persuade Barcelona to pay some of his salary when we take him on loan. And so it's not just about how good is Coutinho. It's about deciding if he's good against what you would likely pay. And as you say, then you ask yourself, will he get back to his best? Well, what's his best now? It's been that long that he hasn't had continuity, that it's very difficult to know what his best is. In defence of Coutinho, I would argue that, though, that if you give this guy consistent games in his position, you will certainly get a better player out of him than we've seen at Barcelona. That's not to say you'll get the player we saw at Liverpool, but you should be able to get a better player than we've seen here in La Liga.
Yeah, but that bar has been set very low, to be fair. Nadim, you played against him. Are you surprised the drop-off that we've seen from Coutinho, given the performances that he was putting in, week out, in a Liverpool shirt?
Not necessarily. I think there are tons of players who sort of fall by the wayside when, say, they go to the wrong place at the wrong sort of moment. But he's still a fantastic player, a fantastic talent. But the game's changed a little bit. And I think when you hear him being linked with Aston Villa and so on, I'll be clear, I think he's obviously a very good talent. But Aston Villa are very different to Barcelona, to Bayern Munich, to Liverpool. I think they play very much as an underdog sometimes, and they're not really that adventurous in terms of their style of play. So to be able to have somebody who basically plays in a 10 and isn't necessarily as two-way as you need to be playing in that side, I don't know. I think Gerrard could maybe bring him back to, say, being what he was, but that's not necessarily what Aston Villa need, in my opinion. Obviously, Gerrard knows a lot more about him and that setup than I do. But yeah, it's really interesting. But then he just seems like one of many players who ended up going to Barcelona or in and around that sort of caliber of club and just struggling, almost losing your mojo. And now as a consequence, you know, you're almost perceived as a luxury, and that's a shame because, like, he's very talented. I played against him when he was at Liverpool, and I think I played against him as well when he was at Inter Milan. I remember thinking, this guy's incredible. He was such a great talent then, and he's still got some years ahead of him, but hopefully he can find some sort of form. But I just don't think the best of him exists at Aston Villa, in my opinion.
One player who has switched La Liga to the Premier League is Kieran Trippier. That move to Newcastle confirmed. Sid, why? Why'd he go? And why go to Newcastle?
Well, look, I mean, there are lots of reasons. Let's not be over coy about it. Of course, that's part of it. You know, you're talking about a footballer, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a footballer who's 31, who will look at this as the last really big contract of his career, who looks at it as a very, very big contract as well, a contract that's huge for a right back, albeit a very talented one, who will see this maybe as an opportunity to get back to the Premier League, which he very clearly wanted to do. It's true that on the face of it, when you put it in simple terms and you say, do you play for a Champions League team that's just won Liga or a team fighting against relegation, it seems absolutely absurd. But I think you have to put those other factors in. You have to put into the equation the possibility of factors that we don't fully understand in terms of what his family situation is, in terms of how happy he is just being back home, or being back in the UK anyway. And so I think those are the fundamental reasons. And of course, he's there to kind of take on a responsibility and a leadership at a new club that he was possibly never going to have being a foreign player at Atletico Madrid.
Is this the catalyst now, Jules? Are we going to see many more players making that move to Newcastle?
I don't think it's that simple, Dan. I think this one worked out well because, as Sid explained, one, there was the money, two, there was the family situation, three, his age as well, and I think the fact that he was quite easy to convince, in the sense that they're second from bottom in the Premier League. There's a chance that they go down. I don't know what is written in this contract in case they go down to the Championship. Is there a clause that said he can leave, or I don't know, whatever is there. But this is the problem they have now, is that every agent, every person that they speak to, intermediary, whatever you want, player directly, player's dad, that we were talking about Tim Haaland before, it comes to, okay, but what happens if you go down? You know, my son, my player, whatever, doesn't want to go down and play in the Championship next season. So if they were 10th or 11th in the table, it would be much easier for them to go and splash all the money that they have. The problem is, right now, they're ready to spend all that cash, but it's more difficult to convince the players to come over because of that uncertainty of where they will be next season.
Erling Haaland, Jan.
No, he will never go there. But it's quite interesting discussion. But first of all, you have the January window is a difficult window. That is point one. So what kind of players are available for Newcastle? And I think this Trippier, that is a great kind of business for Newcastle, because he can help them. He will help them straight away to stay in the Premiership. But say, when I see that Coutinho, for example, is linked to Newcastle, what on the earth of unbelievable moves should he help them to not get into Championship? I mean, Burnley, if Burnley saw that Newcastle signed Coutinho, they would have a party, because they knew that Newcastle would be behind them. So this is going to be a difficult window for Newcastle. It's not only to splash out money. They will end up maybe Aubameyang, who is not happy at Arsenal. That could be a good thing, to score goals for them to stay in there. But when you see all these kind of players are linked to them, then we just see, I look forward to Middlesbrough, Newcastle in the Championship next season, if not Middlesbrough go up, which they probably will.
Nadim, you had a front row seat, of course, when all this was going on at Manchester City, from a team with no money to all the money in the world. What's that like from your perspective, like within the squad?
Okay, so first things first. So the current owners, that was the second takeover in the space of a year, because the year before we had Tenzin Shinawatra and we were promised this was going to be the rise of Man City. And then 6 months later, his assets were frozen. He wasn't allowed back in the country. So that was the first taste of, oh, we're going to do it. Oh, no, maybe we're not. But anyway, this new, the next ownership came in. And all of a sudden, you saw we were linked with absolutely everybody. Like, I mean, everybody. I was seeing Kaká and all sorts. But one thing which I think they got right in that time is that some of the signings they had, they felt like longer-term signings. They didn't end up bringing in, say, the top tier level talent, which you sort of see at the club now, and it sort of fit the process. And I think for me, Kieran Trippier is a great signing for them, because I've seen Kieran. He came through the academy at Man City a couple of years younger than me. He's a good kid, good humble kid from just in from the north of England again. And he played in the Championship. He rose to the Premier League with Burnley. Then he earned the right to go to Spurs. Then he earned the right to play for England, to go and play for Atleti. And I'll be honest, if everything goes wrong for Newcastle, based on who he is as a person, I wouldn't be surprised if he stayed on in the Championship. Because he's not, even though he's going and he's going to be getting a ton of money, he's never been driven by that. And I think he understands the importance of staying in the Premier League for Newcastle. And that's what you want to see. And I think once you bring in players who can understand what the fans want, what the club need, then that's great. But as we were saying, sort of alluding to there, someone like a Coutinho going there doesn't seem to fit. But for me, like a Kieran Trippier makes perfect sense, because he is a full England international being brought in for £12 million, who's gritty, good on the ball, and might be able to help you get across the line. But yeah, to go back to the City times, you know, barring, say, one or two incidents or in terms of transfers, I think they kind of got it right. They didn't go too big too early, but in time, in every stage of the journey, they seem to pick the right sort of people, barring maybe Balotelli, because that was, I suppose, Roberto Mancini's thing.
Do you have a Robinho story on that note, I feel, Nader? May need to be told now.
Well, the Robinho story is, I think everybody probably knows this, but when he signed in Manchester, he thought he signed for Manchester United. So when he arrived and we were in a Lecoq Sportif shirt where everything was really baggy and loose, and he's looking around and he's seeing me after he's just been at the Bernabeu. You know, yeah, don't worry, Robbie, I'll feed you. You've got nothing to worry about. I'll give you everything that you need. You know, but aside from that, yeah, everything else was great.
Brilliant. Nadim, do you think that Newcastle can follow that City blueprint and achieve the success that they have?
Well, so the cynic in me kicks in here. I think overall people think that football is a meritocracy, but the fact is the teams that sit towards the top of most leagues around the world tend to have the most money available and the most assets. So for Newcastle, the expectation is that further down the line they will be successful. But I think the difference is between them now and what City were. Like now, you see seven teams who are really thinking top four is like almost like the minimum expectation. And Newcastle want to join that, whereas for City it was different then. The rise of some of the other teams wasn't quite there at that point. So for Newcastle, it's going to be tougher, but they have the assets to be able to do so. And I think if they get the strategy right, then they'll be able to bring in the right people at the right sort of time. But the task and the journey, maybe it's going to be longer, because the adversaries that you have now, like it might take 2-3 years for Newcastle to maybe be thinking about the top four. For all we know, they might be in the Championship next year. So it's a different journey. But I think for the City side of things, it was different, because when the takeover happened, we were in the Europa League and we were basically a mid-table side. So it felt like you were trying to build on something that was already there. Whereas for Newcastle, in terms of them in the Premier League as it stands, nothing feels steady whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So there's potential, but it seems like it would probably end up being a longer journey.
But Dan, I just want to make one point when we're discussing this, when we compare the two clubs. What Newcastle got that Manchester City didn't have, and other clubs that you put a lot of money in, you have a very passionate fan base. I mean, Newcastle, St. James's Park, this is one of the, and I say it as a former Middlesbrough player, but that is one of the best places you could go. And I think that is, and he explained it well with Trippier, maybe this is the club where you go. They've done it before. They went down, they got Kevin Keegan in. This is how this club is built. So if they can build on their history, if they can do that, that could be a good selling point for players coming in to rise that club. But it's a long, long journey, and this is not Fantasy League, you just swap players before some kind of deadline. This is real, the real life, and real life could be Championship, but maybe they have to take that step back to come back big again.
Great stuff, guys. As always, thank you very much. Just a reminder, La Liga continues this weekend. Saturday sees Real Madrid take on Valencia. That's live coverage starts at 2:30 Eastern. Preceding that, it's Granada against Barcelona. Then a late game on Sunday, it's Villarreal against Atleti. All of these games available on ESPN+.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Bundesliga then is back this weekend. It all starts with Bayern Munich against Borussia Mönchengladbach. That's on Friday. And then on Saturday, Augsburg taking on Hoffenheim. Borussia Dortmund away against Eintracht Frankfurt. All of those games available on ESPN+. A couple of bits of MLS news for you. James Sands is heading to Scotland. He's making the switch from NYCFC to Rangers. He signed an 18-month loan deal there. Meanwhile, St. Louis FC, who of course will be the new franchise that will join in 2023, Bradley Carnell has been hired as the new coach there. For a lot more on that, of course, and what's been going on across the continent, be sure to check out Football America's, the latest edition available on ESPN+. That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much for watching. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Who's coming back? I think it's Frank Nadem and maybe Jules as well to answer your tweets on Extra Time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Look, it's here. Frank, Nadem and Jules. Jules, have you recovered from Shaka's, well, just abuse of you yesterday, just shouting at you constantly?
I know him and Craig teaming up against me just because they still thought like football now is the same as when they were playing 30 years ago. I mean, football has changed now. Dressing rooms are different, you know.
Jules,
this is what happens.
Don't start. That winds them up more than anything. They'll say it's still the same game. It's still played the same way. Oh no, you can call them dinosaurs.
Same pace as well. Yeah.
Just because they were shouting
at
you.
Same pace, same preparation, same diet.
For Nadem and Frank, as a player, did any of your managers openly diminish the value of cup competitions, such as the FA Cup or League Cup, because they placed emphasis on the league or Europe? Nadem?
Yeah, so with some of my managers, they're not necessarily the same sort of standard as Frank's. You know, we had two very different careers. One won a World Cup, one watched it. But I had a manager who was always very keen to bring players in January. So when the FA Cup came, he'd always make 11 changes. We wouldn't prepare in the week in the build-up to the game. We'd leave late from the team hotel to go to the game. We'd get there, not have a clue what we're doing. And then we'd go out and surprise, surprise, we'd lose the game. And he says, oh, you know, you guys, you said you wanted a chance. Yeah, still here we are losing the game. So I think anytime I see a manager make 11 changes and the preparation is not the same, you can tell from the get-go. They couldn't care any less about that competition at all.
Is that Mancini again, Nadem?
I didn't play either way, so it definitely wasn't him.
Frank, what about you?
No, never. You know, I want to say to Nadem that we didn't play in the same era. So at the time, at my time, you know, the FA Cup and the League Cup was important cups to play. And we didn't never put the so-called the B team. Everybody was very into it and we wanted to play every game we could. So even if we were playing with the national team, even if we were playing the Champions League, we wanted to play, to be involved in any tie of the FA Cup, of the League Cup. So I never had any coach telling me, no, we don't want to play that, we're going to put the B or C team. No, I played all of the game with all intensities because we wanted to win it.
Yeah, it's professional. That's why. That's it, Frank. That's why you got a World Cup winner's medal, which you never mentioned. Do players actually take criticism from fans seriously? If so, why? Us fans never played past school. We literally have no clue what we're talking about. Do you listen to fans at all when you were playing, Frank?
Well, in a lower division, yes. I remember a guy, you know, on the corner kick. I think I was playing for Laval, and we played to Luan Cuiseau. Don't ask me where that city is. I don't even know. But I remember the corner kick was like maybe 1,000 people in the stand, and the guy say to me, you know why you're here, you stupid man. You know what your wife is doing while you're here. The guy say that to me, and I turn and say, well, I don't know, but I know what your wife is doing. And we got crazy, and we start talking about that. That was insane. That was completely insane. I'm sorry if I'm being rude, but that was crazy. The guy was talking to me, literally.
And you were talking back as well, Frank. Made him imagine at QPR.
Of course, I'm French.
Yes, indeed. You think at Loftus Road, the crowd are really on top of you, aren't you, Nate? So you must hear a lot.
Oh, yes. We heard a lot of things, especially in the two seasons where we got relegated. Yeah, we heard everything. We heard literally everything. But to be honest, the stuff in the stadium doesn't really bother you. It's more so the stuff which doesn't go away, because they'll tweet you, they'll send you an Instagram message, they'll reach out to you however they can. And, you know, you're not bothered, because you could totally completely disagree, but that's the issue. The fact that you completely disagree and you can't respond to them, that's so frustrating sometimes, because I just want to say, what are you talking about? But then instead, I just sit there and say, all right, fair enough, I'm going to have to block these notifications and just try and get on with my life.
What about on the street, Nathan? Would people, fans, criticise you there as well?
Never. Dan, you've seen me in real life, mate. Nobody does that.
Dan.
Go on,
Dan, I have a story about. And when I was, we played.
Don't involve anybody's wife. Right, go on.
No. We played a tie against Marseille in the Champions League, and we won the second leg at Chelsea, and we put Marseille out. And at the time, the fans of the visiting team was close to the tunnel, and people from Marseille insulted me while I was going out of the field, and I say, well, go back to your place, and blah blah blah. We started to insult each other and everything, and like a year after, I signed for Marseille. And I was the captain of Marseille, and one of the guys came, and he was a huge guy, huge, I tell you, a monster. And he came to me, said, do you remember when you insulted me when I was at Chelsea, and you won, and you asked us to get out of here? I said, yes, and I said, well, I'm dead. I'm gonna be killed in 2 seconds. And the guy said to me, you know that? I loved it. It's why you're Frank. And it's, I was like that after that. I was so scared.
I bet. Nathan, you're waving at us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I want to bring Jules into this, because I want to know, is he more upset by criticism from players about stuff that he says, or more from like the fans who read the stuff that he says? What's more important to you?
Do you think anybody reads his stuff?
Fans,
that's impressive.
The fans are only loving, you know, they're huge fans of mine, of course. So there's hardly any criticism there. From former players on this particular show, of course, this is a bit different. But I think to a certain extent for us and Gab, I mean, Gab responds to everything. Like, yeah. Someone's called him an idiot, like it happens a lot on social media. Gab would then engage with the guy for 45 minutes trying to explain why he isn't and that kind of stuff. I said to him, just leave it. I'm very good for just leaving the rubbish and not focusing on it.
Sid's horrible at that as well. Sid interacts with everybody and gets really frustrated with people. Yeah. Like, what are you doing? You wouldn't talk to these people in real life. Then why do it on here? To Jules, if Arsenal could afford Erling Haaland, wouldn't he be a perfect fit in this young Arsenal setup under Arteta? He would surely buy into the project.
Yeah, yeah, and if Santa Claus existed, I think, you know, it would be a better world. But...
Jules, what are you doing? What are you doing? Of course he exists.
What? I mean, it's just in the truth.
You know, sorry, like, you know, if everybody had a lot of money to spend as football clubs, then life would be much better for everyone. The thing is, they can't afford him. He probably would not want to go there. So thanks for the question, but sorry.
Jules, would Manchester City be even better if they signed Ronaldo, or did they dodge a bullet?
Oh, that's a really good one. I mean, that's one we went over a little bit in the summer when he was first linked with them. I don't think you can fail, per se, if you play in a Pep Guardiola team, and especially a team as good as this one. I think this team is so good collectively that if you take one out and you put Cristiano in, I think Cristiano will score loads of goals. It would be a success. They might play a bit differently, of course, and adapt to his qualities, and he might not be able to do all the pressing and all that kind of stuff that Pep wants. But I just don't think that Cristiano Ronaldo would have been an issue at Man City in this team, the team that we're seeing now dominating the Premier League. The problem at United is that this is not structurally, and also in terms of talent, nowhere near a team as good as the one at City that he would have played in. So at City, I don't think City dodged a bullet or anything like this. He would have been very good at City. City would have been very good with him. It just didn't happen, but United is a very, very different context.
What do you think, Nathan, with your City ways?
Honestly, I'm just trying to be neutral out here. But anyway, I think I agree with Jules there. I think if he came to City, I don't think he wouldn't have failed. I think we'd see a different version of City, because maybe the pressing wouldn't be like what it is. Maybe there'd have been times where maybe you don't see those midfielders playing that little bit higher. But the fact is, he's one of the greatest goal scorers of all time. And I'm pretty sure with the setup the City have, their style of play, the identity, the belief, and all that stuff that they have, I think he would have thrived. And it's a shame he didn't come, but the fact is he wanted to go somewhere else. And he's definitely part of their project at the moment, yeah.
Nathan, ever think you might go into coaching?
They're so politically correct, those two.
What's wrong with you, Frank? Just because you weren't involved in the question, you've got to chip in. What do you want to say?
No, they're so politically correct, you know. With all due respect to Cristiano Ronaldo, I always say that to have a megastar on the in the team is always a problem. And when you put the squad before every talent and every player, even if it's a Ronaldo, you will have a problem when you have a mega star, because you have to play the team around him, which is not the case and the tactic from Guardiola. Yeah, it could have been a big problem to have Ronaldo at City, and I'm pretty sure that it wouldn't have been the same. Maybe Ronaldo would have scored more goals, but the tactic, especially the counter-pressing, would have been an issue. If you would,
yeah, Nathan, start telling the truth.
Sorry, it's my fault. Sorry, I apologise. Ronaldo would have been a bust. There you go. I said it. You'd have been a bust because Frank told me to say it.
I never said that.
I'm joking. I'm joking. Don't be politically correct, Frank. Say it with all your chest.
You know me. I'm not.
Nathan, ever think you might go into coaching?
Yes.
Your calm voice would be very welcome in locker rooms.
No, absolutely not. Thank you very much. I think, you know, I've got ideas and so does everybody, but the fact is, I don't want my life to be based around that football schedule anymore. I'm enjoying the freedom to go and do whatever I want, whenever I want, but also make sure I'm back in time to do this show. So no, there's no chance. If it was between coaching and ESPN FC, has to be an evening with Dan Thomas. Has to be.
Hey, it's not even a debate, is it? Jules,
no.
Well, and for me, for Dan and Jules, what's the toughest interview you've ever had to do, Jules?
Oh, wow.
I'll tell you mine as you're thinking, because we had Pele on.
Go on.
And it was a live show. And it was the Friday before the Super Bowl, and he was going. Like, I think it was a Subway thing. And I thought, it'd be a good last question to ask who he thinks is going to win the Super Bowl. Did not go well at all. He just waffled on for 2 minutes, clearly not understanding what he said. and I doubled down. I asked him again afterwards, like an idiot. No, but who do you think's going to win this? I had no clue, and it was like we'll run out of time. It was just one of those moments. You're like, Dan, just stop talking. What are you doing? So yeah, that was very bad. Strachan was hard work as well when I first started interviewing people. That's when I first started on the job. But Gordon Strachan was a good person to kind of start with because he like took no nonsense, took no prisoners. If you asked a stupid question, he would tell you. You knew you had to be kind of prepared going into it.
Yeah, I mean, some of them, and it's not that I don't want to name names, but it's just that this is not their thing. They don't really like it. Often their answers are shorter than your question, which is very awkward because you say, so, you know, and you get into your question and you put rhythm in and enthusiasm and they go like literally three words. Yeah, yeah, I think we played well. Okay, this is going to be a long, long moment, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's the ones that, and it's, just this is not their thing. That's it.
Yeah. Thierry Henry was a bit annoying as well when I interviewed him. It might just be a French thing. I don't know. Because it was when
I think it was
when Mourinho came out and called Wenger. What was it? Something of failure, like the master of failure or something like that. And I asked Henry about it. And he goes, I have nothing to say. And I'm like, oh, can I say something? Crikey, at least. But there we are. Do you get on with Thierry Henry, Frank?
Excuse me, if I...
Do you like Thierry Henry?
I have nothing to say.
Wow, there you are, you see?
No. Of course I love Thierry. Of course I love Thierry. Are you kidding me or what? I love Thierry.
Final question. Tell us your best, worst own goal story. Ah, Nader, this is right up your alley.
No, leave it out, you clown. Do you know what? I didn't score that many. I think maybe two or three. And I don't remember the details about them being funny, but there was one game, and I'm going to throw someone else under the bus because it was Richard Dunn, who's got the second most, I think, in Premier League history. And we were playing against West Brom, and they actually beat us 1-0 when we were at Man City. And they didn't have a shot, but it was that Richard Dunn on goal in the last minute of the game, which crossed the line with Robert Earnshaw sprinting as quick as I've seen any human being in the history of the world to try and get a toe on to the end of it. That meant that we lost the game 1-0 without the opposition having a shot. And unfortunately, yeah, that's probably my biggest on goal memory, and thankfully it wasn't my own.
Wow. So your own goal memory is somebody else, because you've blanked your own goals from your brain.
Yes, sir. That's the way you do it.
Frank, you'll remember your own goals, I bet.
I guess there are some. There is one I remember. It was a derby, Strasbourg against Metz, and it was in Metz, and I tried to tackle on the cross and while he went in. But I remember one back pass that I made to Fabien Barthez with the national team, and he tried to kick the ball, and there was a band just before him, and he missed the ball, but the ball went just out. And I would have very be upset to hear that I made an own goal because he missed the ball. So I would have suggested that it was his own goal. But I fortunately went just out.
That is it, boys. Thank you so much. Just a reminder, ESPN FC will be back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us. Kay Murray will be in the hot seat.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.